This hour is brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com.
6 seconds to go. Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
With the third pick in the 2024 WNBA draft, the Chicago Sky select Camila Cardoso, University of South Carolina.
Thanks to ESPN for those highlights. And we have the pleasure now of welcoming to The Score on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Hall of Famer, three-time national champion coach, and reigning national champion coach, Dawn Staley. Dawn, thanks for joining us today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Thank you for going on my walk with me. I'm sorry, we got to get our walks in early in South Carolina because it's going to go up to 90.
Okay, so this adds to a question I was going to say for later, but I might as well ask it now. Is there going to be another dog since there was another championship?
You know, somebody asked me that because I said every time we won a national championship that I would get a dog. But my one and only dog, Champ, said he's an only child. So, no.
That's okay with being front and center. Coach, how do you describe the buildup from the beginning of this past season and what we saw? It was really fun to watch your game be broadcast in the lead up to it, be on national TV and have the special and then have it play out the way it did, undefeated, yet another title, and see all the eyes who watch this Final Four and watch the championship game culminate like this. And then even going into the NBA, WNBA draft and seeing your players succeed like they did as well.
You know, when you've been around the game as long as I've been around the game, it doesn't happen very often like this, or it probably never happens to a lot of people. We just really got lucky. We got lucky. We lost all of our starters, and we've returned some talent, no doubt about it. Talent doesn't always say you're going to win the last game of the season, but what our talent was able to do is create some chemistry. Like, it was inner chemistry. It wasn't easy. I think our players decided that they wanted to win for each other. And we didn't do any, like, team bonding or life skills or anything like that. We did some life skills stuff, but it was more of just them. We wanted them to spend some time with each other. But just when the season started, I do think our game in Paris against Notre Dame really gave our players – some confidence to know that they're really good. And it was all on their doing too. Like, once they saw that they were good, they didn't want to be anything but good, but great. So I think, you know, when you've been around the game as long as I've been around the game, it just doesn't happen this way. You put the hard work into it, and we did. We really got lucky. We got lucky throughout the season, but we prepared to be lucky. Because you can just be lucky, but you can also prepare to be lucky, because there were some games in which, you know, it took some heroics by your number three pick in the WNBA draft. Camila Cardoso hit a three in the SEC semifinals in the tournament. And, you know, the claws of defeat were grabbing around our team. And somehow we got lucky enough to hit a miracle shot and from there, it continued to give us the boost to just take that confidence throughout the rest of the season, knowing that we were going to be up against some great competition. But again, when you have someone like Camila Cardoso, she gives you a really good shot at winning because you can control the paint with a player like Camila.
Well, I loved what you said immediately after the Sky drafted her. I know we're excited to see her play in Chicago, but when she said, "Nobody's out rebounding us with Angel Reese and her." That's such a great team. I hear you laughing. I know that's something that she prioritizes. It certainly showed.
Look, Camilla's the ultimate competitor. Angel Reese, ultimate competitor. We had a lot of battles last year and this year, this season. We were the top two teams in the SEC. So, you know, they are enemies by nature because of of rivalries, but now they're joining hands and hopefully bringing a WNBA championship to Chicago. So I'm a fan. I'm gonna get me some season tickets. I know I won't be there the entire season, but somebody's gonna be sitting in my seats cheering Camila Cardoso on.
And the fact that you're a fan also comes through in the level of diplomacy, Don, that you've shown regarding Caitlin Clark. And there are other people with resumes. You know, you're talking about some Hall of Fame levels, some OGs in the basketball business that can't quite seem to bring themselves to say all of the nice things that would seem to come so easily. Does that surprise you? And why have you been simply just more comfortable in acknowledging how special and awesome Caitlin Clark has been?
Let me say this. I don't think other people are hating on Caitlin Clark. I think it was more respect for the history of the game. So I think it comes from that perspective, because when you think of some of the greats, because when you throw around the greatest college basketball player ever, I think of Breanna Stewart, who won 4 championships. I do. Like, I'm never going to forget that, because she banged it on our head all 4 years. And then when I think about Caitlin Clark, I do think she's one of the greatest. Like, she's the greatest of her time. She's the greatest of her time. And I want women's basketball to grow. And I'm not too shy about saying why it grows. She's made it grow over the past 2 years. And I'm actually going to go back to her freshman year when she was killing then, when nobody wanted to talk about Caitlin Clark because, you know, Paige Beckers was all of that, deserving so. But I saw Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark won my Dawn Staley Award in her freshman year when everything was about Paige Becker. And it's nothing to take away from Paige Becker, but it's everything to say that we need to make sure that we're telling the stories of our entire game. So sometimes you have to go against the masses to really cut down and say what's happening, you know, in real time. Caitlin Clark is the sole reason why viewership has shot through the roof for our game. Sole reason. And I think the decision makers are following suit in making sure that other games are being played besides Caitlin Clark, because if you play Caitlin Clark, you're going to run up against somebody that you might find as pretty good. You know, we were pretty good. Like, over 18 million people saw our national championship game. They tuned in to see Caitlin Clark. But what did they get? They got Caitlin Clark, and they got South Carolina. They got Camila Cardoso. They got Ashton Watkins. They got Malaysia Fuwale. They got Tessa Johnson. They got a number of players that they can now cheer for.
Let's not act like you're not on that list too, Dawn, when we start talking about greatest college players of all time. But I wanted to ask you, how did you develop your coaching style? Because when I see how other players react to you, players from other teams, how they react to you, I'm going, wow, there's a great balance of respect and love that seems to come to you and from you. How did you figure out how to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't care. Like, I care about our game. I care about the people in our game. I do. I want our game to grow. So I'll compliment players if in a game. If a player, you know, hell, Caitlin Clark hit a three right in front of me. She did push off my player. Banged the three right in front of me. And I'm like, damn, like, okay. Like, good shot. Like, I mean, it's all of that. Like, I'm impressed with our young talent. I'm impressed with the coaching. I'm impressed with seeing great basketball. Like I've watched so much basketball this year because I had access to it. It was on ESPN. It was on ESPN2. I had my iPad going. I had my laptop going. I'm a woman of many TVs in my house and cable boxes and all of that. So I was stimulated so much this season that it was really hard for me to prepare for our opponents because there was so much good, great basketball. Like, I had to get my stuff in by 5 p.m. Eastern time because that's when games are going to be starting to play on national television and in streaming services. So I just want everybody to win. I truly, and I'm not being facetious when I say that. This game has been so good to me, like personally good to me, that I feel like I owe basketball. Like I'm forever indebted to basketball, and I got to do it in this way, is to show love.
There's no doubt that you come from a place of service. It shows, you know, in the game you coach or whether you're talking to reporters. I thought it was so kind of you to wait after the national title game, after you were on the podium, and then come back and talk to reporters. But I also appreciate what you say about the important part about other schools investing. And you bring up how South Carolina has invested in women's basketball and how that needs to happen in more schools in the NCAA. What is your thought on that?
It's just my thought. Like I, you know, we do the same things. Like if you really look across colleges and universities, you'll see that the women's sports programs are killing it in the space, killing it. And I don't think we get enough credit. I don't. People will say because we're not revenue producing. I think we are revenue producing. I think the fact that we get 16,000 people in our arena every game. We have, you know, 5 sellouts per season every year. Concession stands open. Okay, people are coming from near and far to have lunch and dinner, to stay in hotels. We are revenue producing, but it's because our athletic department and our university, they have poured into our program, and they pour into women's programs. I mean, I make a lot of money. They pour into me because I'm a representative of our athletics department, our university, our city, our state, and they pay me well for it because we've been successful. And that is the way it's supposed to be. When you're successful, we need to find the money to pay the successful people. And if it's women, it's women. If it's men, it's men. I really try to get to that place of understanding why we cheapen it if it's women. Why we cheapen our salaries, why we have an excuse for why we shouldn't pay. And it's revenue producing, but what sport besides Power Five football produces revenue? Everybody's in the red. Is everybody in the red? But it's about how you value. What's your value system? And I do think at South Carolina, they value me being an asset to our university. And there are others across the country that are assets to the community, to the university, to the city and their state, and they should be paid accordingly.
Don, let's go back to
that's investing.
Let's go back to the SEC tournament, because that shot that Camilla hit was in front of her family, and I remember that being like a big deal that her family had made it in from Brazil. How were you able to make that happen, number one, and why was it important to you to make that happen? Yeah.
Camilla sacrificed so much, you know, as a young person to come over here in the eighth grade and spend your high school years, in someone else's home. And then spend another 4 years in college away from her family. Like there was 4 years before she even actually was able to go home after coming to the States. And then, We Camilla didn't even know we were trying to get her sister and her mom here. They took a bus 12 hours from their hometown to, I think it was Sao Paulo, where they needed, no, Rio. I don't know what city they had to go to, but they got interviewed for like 2 seconds, and the counselor people said no. They just said no. They got denied a visa to come to the States to see their daughters, their daughter and sister. And then we're like, okay, well, we only got a month left before, you know, her senior night. So I said, we got to call Congressman Clyburn, everybody at the top level of our university, our president. You know, we got everybody involved to make it happen, and somehow the next time they went, that 12-hour bus ride, just as quickly as they got turned away, is they got the stamp of approval because they really understood what they were trying to do and who they were trying to do it for. So sometimes it takes some political people to make things happen. And I'm just so very happy that a magical moment happened while they were here. It was magical regardless. But for Camilla to make that shot and that time to continue our undefeated season, it will be etched in their hearts, in their minds, in their souls that they got a chance to witness that.
We're talking with Hall of Famer and three-time national champion, reigning national champion, Dawn Staley. And Dawn, I know you have to get rolling soon. But I wanted to thank you for the answer you gave that rodent troll of a reporter when it came to the theoretical question about trans athletes. I thought what you said was significant. It will be remembered. And I thought it took a great deal of courage for you to say something that sounded so simple but meant so much to so many people.
Well, I appreciate that, and you know, I'm a human being. We're talking about human beings. So I always speak from my heart, whether people believe it or not. I know the God I serve has blessed me. He's blessed me. Whether you agree or disagree, that's on you. Everybody has an opportunity to speak what they believe in. It's just so somebody threw a mic in front of me and they caught me off guard with the question. And I didn't even know what the first question was. I had to ask myself the question to answer my own question because I really didn't understand it. So I appreciate you. I've gotten so much incredible letters, emails from the transgender community, that it does my heart good knowing that somebody speaks up for them.
And lastly, I've always been wondering, and you're the perfect person to ask, what's the deal with Kim Mulkey? Like, why is she seemingly so unhappy, defensive, and just kind of mean? Like, what's her deal?
I mean, Kim Mulkey, she's a competitor. Like, she's not gonna allow people to speak out of turn. She's not going to allow people to speak out of term regarding her players. That's just the way she is. I mean, you either love her or you hate her. She's a competitor. You know, I think the world's a better place because we have a Kim Mulkey, because she's going to push conversations that nobody else would like to talk about. Good, bad, or indifferent. I think she's good for our sport because we're treated as a sport because they somewhat look at her as a villain, and they love villains. We love villains. Every sport loves villains. It makes our sport go to another place. And, you know, she's Kim Mulkey. I can't speak out of term with her. I mean, she's been nothing but kind to me, congratulatory, and I've been nothing but welcoming her into the SEC. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. You know, I don't. I love competing against her. I really do. I love competing against her because I know, you know, if you beat a Kim Mulkey's team, you know she's prepped well for you, and she's not going to like it.
Well, Dawn, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being on with us, and we look forward to seeing you in Chicago at a Sky game. And I can't wait because I got to ask you the question about crossing over Martin Lawrence, but that's another story for another time. Dawn, thanks so much.
The great Dawn Staley.
That was great. We all got to hang out with her on her morning walk.
I mean,
walking champ.
I don't know how you top that season, man. Like that would be my question.
74-1 in the last two seasons.
How do you draw up?
How many?
How do you draw up a better season than that? And to see all of your players succeed the way they did, and we get to talk about Camilla Cardoso on the Sky, like to see it all the way through to the WNBA.
And even like a player like Raven Johnson, who was embarrassed last year by Caitlin Clark. Embarrassed to, I dare you to shoot. I dare you to shoot. We're going to sag off of her because she can't shoot. And then Raven Johnson worked really hard. Dawn went out and got a bunch of shooters to add to what her dominance was inside. It's great coaching. Like, really incredible coaching.
And there are so many people in that sport, coaches, who that's what they want to do. Like, that, there's an authenticity, there is a true love for the game in general and wanting to support it, and that means all facets. I just, man, I could listen to that woman cook for hours.
Me too.
She's truly greatness.
I think I'm going to try to find a time to go down there. Like, I think I want to experience, like, a Dawn press conference.
And also just to work with politicians who understand sports, man.
And hopefully we get a chance to see her. Like, I love that.
Who wouldn't?
I love that idea of her just being in the city, hanging out.
And Camila Cardoso seems so happy to be here.
Well,
the first
yeah.
thing she talked about is rebounding.
Well, good. And we're going to talk to the Sky general manager in the 1 o'clock hour, Jeff Pagliacca. And I'll ask him the question, the stuff we were talking about yesterday, about how the organization is going to meet this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity where it needs to be met with investment and effort and not presuming everything is going to be done for you.
She speaks out about that for a reason, Dawn Staley. She speaks out about the importance
resources.
Of investment.
Yes, they matter.
And with star power, you know, you want to make sure that people also have the ability to focus, too, because it's such an accessible sport.
And I loved what she said about her competitor and who's wearing the black hats and the white hats and the whole thing. I'll say this. I know where I would send my daughter. I think it's an easy choice.
And if I had asked you that question years ago before, but if I had asked you that question years ago, a school in the SEC, in the American South, which was an entrant in the Tournament of Bad.
I know the camp, the person that I would like having that much of an outsized impact on someone important to me. And I think that decision is very easy.
And she makes a huge difference for everybody there, too. It's we need her.
Let's talk a little more basketball when we come back. I did watch the NBA stuff last night, and there was stuff. There was a lot going on. You had, you know, Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller making that early game feel very, very big. And there was a very, very big person out there running into some habitual issues.
And are the Warriors over?
Probably. Yeah, kind of.
Nick Friedell covered them for years on a network we can't mention. He's next on the Score.
No, he's not. He's coming up actually in the next hour.
Yeah, we're just going to talk about the play-in games next, the three of us.
I was on Eastern time. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
I forgot time and space because Dawn Staley's cool.
She is cool. Talk more Buckets next here on the Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Shot clock is off, and they chant light the beam here in Sacramento, and they're going to do just that. Two great friends, Mike Brown and Steve Kerr, an embrace. Largest margin of victory since 2006 for Sacramento over Golden State, and Keegan Murray was brilliant here tonight with 32 points.
Well, that was a no-doubter. The early game got exciting, and was at the moment that Zion left, you just thought, because there were so many moments, so many exchanges, haymakers being thrown, and big threes and big rebounds. Anthony Davis had an unbelievable rebound. I don't know if you saw it, but he reached up with his right hand against his body and over a defender and scooped the rebound with one hand on the back sweep. That's remarkable. Remarkable to be able, I've seen a one-handed rebound where you kind of pull it down like a football catch. He did oppositely. It was in a really important time. And to see LeBron at his age doing what he's doing and going up against and Zion, I felt a little cheated that Zion left, but it was fun stuff.
Well, and what was compelling too was what happened on Sunday leading up to the games to yesterday and today. Like, that to me also gave it so much context. And that Lakers-Pelicans game on Sunday that was in New Orleans, I was like, oh, is this a preview of what we're going to see? And yeah, there's something about these players, this generation of players, and how they're programmed, where if you say tournament, everybody gets a little more hype, whether it's in season, whether it's play-in, whether it's the playoffs, it does take it up a level. And I appreciate that when we get to watch it and enjoy.
I felt like, man, you're watching full strength Zion. He was going at AD. He was going at LeBron. He was getting the ball in the front court and just going to the basket.
And how about the re-jumps? How about when he was rebounding his own miss and like popping back up multiple times and then getting fouled?
Yeah, like seeing him, all that potential that all of us believe he has was on display last night. And then you go, oh, man, really? Like, this is the way that it ends? Like, it ends like this, where now they're probably not going to have him available for their game?
Physics doesn't care. Physics doesn't care about basketball, and it's just the force. All that force has to go somewhere.
We watch some people defy it, though. We're in a city where people seemingly defied it.
But not at that size. No one's ever been like that. No one's ever been 300 pounds and 6'10 and been that explosive that I can remember. Not like that.
Where?
Well, it makes it so sad because you're like, okay, like this could have been like one of those changing of the guard moments, and it wasn't. And LeBron was amazing last night too. Like his ability to find his teammates, his willingness to find his teammates, and it was on display. It was great. Alvarado was out there playing his ass off.
Everyone adores Alvarado. Not a true point guard.
No, but a pest.
But an athlete and somebody you're happy you got in watching early.
He blocked AD.
Like, he's like, you're proud to have the knowledge of him.
It's a real pest. And whenever he would play the Bulls, he was always a pest.
Oh, my word, yes.
So now we'll see if they can survive their matchup without Zion against Sacramento. And the thing about and we can talk with Nick about this at 12:25, like seeing, hearing the quotes from the locker room of Golden State and seeing the way that game went down last night, it does feel like, you know what really cemented it for me? There was this great video a couple days ago of Steph and Riley Curry. And Riley's like 13 now, and I think she's playing volleyball. So Steph got the ball and he set it, and then she bumped it. He caught it and he shot it and made it. And I was sitting there going, look at how much time has gone by, where now Riley Curry is a young lady. And here we are with this thing being so dominant for as long as it's been that you know you're close to the end. Because soon we're going to be talking about Riley Curry's recruitment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's how far down the road this thing has gone. And Klay's not the same player anymore. And Draymond can't stop kicking people in the ding ding and all of the other
Draymond,
stuff.
It just, stop doing that.
It just feels like the end of something. But I don't want to not watch Steph Curry, because he's still playing at a really high level. And he can probably still do it for a couple more years. But with the way that they're in salary hell too, I don't know how you're going to be able to get out of this.
Just reading the post-game quotes from Steve Kerr, knowing that you can read them with his voice in your head, but just simply reading them, you could tell there's an element of finality here.
Yes.
And we've been asking that question for a long time. We have. We asked when they won their most recent title, was that the end of the run? Is this the end of the run?
I wonder if Steve Kerr is going to return.
I was just going to say, you talk about aging like a president, a guy who was always, you know, alongside and being coached by Phil Jackson for that long. He really is, whether he wanted to or not, and I hope he doesn't keep becoming Phil Jackson.
Well, he's got the bad back.
Yeah,
and
it's been rough on him. It really has. And you can hear he sounds tired, I guess, is what it is. He sounds weary.
Well, last night, I mean, I've talked to him before games here and he didn't sound tired recently this season. But I think last night, when you're trying to put all that together, and you know, here we are being a little hot takey instead of talking as much about the game. We're talking about whether or not this is the end of the Warriors' run. But when he says, we need Klay back, he still has good years left, we desperately want him back. And it's not so much him using the word desperately. It was the phrase, he still has good years left, that got to me.
It's hard when you have a player that was a top five two-way player in Klay, and now he's relegated to maybe he can help us coming off the bench. I don't even know if that's satisfying for Klay.
Well, I don't know that it helps his game either.
No.
I think he needs minutes to be out there to miss the shots, to make the shots.
To be in the rhythm of it?
Yeah, because if he's going to be streaky like that, like we saw it against the Bulls, where if you have a sleepy half and then you have a hot half, you got to be out there for both.
Between the Jordan Poole stuff that happened, the Draymond stuff that keeps happening, and a decline in Klay, I'm not sure what else Steve Kerr has to prove. So I don't know. Like, I wonder if he takes some time and thinks about what happens next, because he's one of the brightest guys in the NBA.
I felt this way about Pop when the Spurs came to their conclusion, and then he got Victor Wembanyama. Like, I felt the same way.
Well, I mean, if you get Victor, then yeah, you definitely want to keep coaching. But even with Pop, like, how many more losing seasons does he want to endure?
And
with a great player.
And he thought he was retiring when Tim retired.
Yep.
Tim Duncan.
And here
maybe
we are.
Remember him.
From Star Wars.
We have High Noon coming up next. Oh, Chicken's here?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Thanks to my friends at Jewel, who know that I give them a lot of my money, because those wings are boneless. Let's go!
These are actually Jewel Osco honey chicken tenders. Hot, boneless, the same sweet breading that made their honey wings so popular. And they're part of Jewel Osco's Love My Tender Tuesday promotion.
As opposed to Cheap Chicken Monday?
Where all the fresh fried tenders are only $5 per pound every Tuesday.
You know where my money goes, Jewel.
Making
you
friends.
You saucy, saucy geniuses.
I guess I'm a born-again koala
Christian.
Truther. Oh. So I've been accused so far on the show of being a Ron Jeremy truther.
Well,
but
you owe $5.
But I am
$5 every time Dan kills somebody.
No, but I'm with Studs on the koala thing now, and koalas are coming here. So now it's acute and urgent.
It's
I want to talk about Cleveland again.
I'm listening. I had to save mine because I know this is going to go in places we need it to go.
You think Cleveland's cool?
I liked their hip-hop station when I passed through.
All right.
Does that count?
We'll talk about that next here on The Score.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
Your Wednesday High Noon marks the middle of your work week, and we have reached it after talking about the Cubs and the underperformance of Kyle Hendricks at varying degrees of alarm. Jed Hoyer, Tommy Hotovy weighed in. I would declare an IL stint for him right now. I just don't think you can run him out there as a member of your active roster with the way he's pitching and the strains that he puts on the rest of your team. We also talked about the coincidence that today marked a year of Kevin Warren on the job with the Bears, and in came the pieces that we've come to expect when Kevin Warren is a headline, where it's more sort of about him and his presence and his power as much as it is what's actually gotten done. And my antenna is always up to something that has felt like a media plan for a political campaign more than a sports executive.
Hear me out. Kevin Warren, the musical.
I'm listening.
It is a political campaign.
We want a stadium. Maybe we bought the land too early.
Exactly.
But now we got to get our taxes lowered. Act two.
We discussed the NBA last night and getting ready for the NBA tonight, and we had a lovely conversation with the always candid and opinionated Dawn Staley.
It's High Noon.
So you like Cleveland? You think Cleveland's cool?
I've never had a problem with Cleveland. Am I supposed to?
That was a famous quote, Dan.
But that's
Joakim Noah. Yeah, right. I've never had a problem
with Cleveland. And Joakim went on and said more things about Cleveland.
Have you and LBJ worked things out yet?
Nope, we haven't, but...
I played in Cleveland. I enjoyed my time in Cleveland.
Yeah.
You not so much. Go ahead.
Well, people have to understand that it had nothing to do with Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
It had everything to do with that LeBron James. Like, yo, every year you're losing, you know you have to get through him. That's where it came from. Like, LeBron was so good, he was stunting on us. Mm-hmm. He was stunting on us. Like, he over here dancing before the game. I see this drove me nuts.
Yeah.
So I had to let him know. But because it's LeBron James and all this, now people think it's like, there's other cities that are just as whack as Cleveland.
Yes.
That's Joakim Noah on the OG show.
It sounded like he was going to kind of defend Cleveland. It's like, no.
No, it's whack.
Oh, my God, it's amazing.
When you grow up in Paris, it's, you know.
Did you guys ever, it reminds me of Vernon Maxwell when Vernon Maxwell's Twitter is hilarious. His pinned tweet that said, I'd like to apologize, Jazz fans, that were offended by my tweets. If I knew you guys had internet in Utah, I would have never made those tweets.
That's right. So shout out to Joakim.
Now they got hockey in Utah. Yeah.
There's other cities as whack as Cleveland.
Visitors to the Brookfield Zoo will soon be able to say g'day to a couple of 2-year-old koalas. For the first time in the zoo's 90-year history, 2 koalas, Brumby and Willem, will take up residency at the zoo. Now, we know that there is, famously, Adam Studzinski hates the very idea of the existence of koalas. And there was a famous rant in that regard. And I have to say that this seeing this story prompted me to do my own research.
Oh, no.
I don't trust the experts here. I don't trust, you know, what goes on in the social media space. I've
got to do trust my tirade.
If you want an expert, you can't ask a koala, apparently.
Well, they're too busy eating poison and falling on their heads. I am a born-again koala, and I don't want to say hater, because it's not really their fault, but there's no reason for koalas. There's no reason. They have, and reading.
Studs just nodding emphatically.
I've been on this for a decade.
You've been on this for a decade. They don't contribute anything. They eat poison on purpose. And because the eucalyptus that they eat is so low in nutrition, their brains can't develop properly, so their skulls are mostly filled with cerebrospinal fluid and incredibly smooth cortexes that don't allow them to adapt any complex tasks. Not only that, they fall out of trees so regularly. They live in trees, and they fall out of their own home so regularly that the extra cushioning of their stupid brains has selected out. So the dumb ones are more likely to pass on their genes because they're protected from falling out of the trees because all the fluid in their heads that's keeping them stupid because they eat poison and have viruses and chlamydia.
And by the way,
I swear I know these people. Wait, koalas?
Wait.
I thought you were talking about people.
No, they've evolved wrong.
Wait.
Somehow they've evolved wrong to reward the smaller brains for their stupidity because it's presumed that they're going to fall on their heads because they can't stay in their own homes.
We're still talking about bears and not people?
They're not bears.
I swear
That's
I think we're talking
thing.
About people.
They're not bears.
They didn't have anything to do with that.
With what? But not being bears?
They didn't classify. They didn't go, we of the koala contingent declare that we are bears.
None of it's really their fault. They just suck.
Actually, it's a good example of evolution in general, is it not? It has nothing to do with reason or your personality. It has to do with what genes you
survival.
Have that are least susceptible to fail.
Right. And they don't have any known predators because predators don't even bother being around them.
And I swear I know these people.
And they've adapted for being dumb and eating poison.
I swear I know these people.
And this is why we shouldn't be saving them. Let them die. It should have happened hundreds of years ago. Where there was those fires in Australia, like, if they're getting any other animals, fine. Just let them take the koalas.
All right, Thanos.
But it sounds like they're going to be here no matter what, because they figured it out.
Because they have no natural predators, because they smell.
I swear.
Not only do they smell, the males have glands on their chest that they use to make other things smell.
Also people.
Like, ugh.
Wait till Dan finds out about skunks.
But they're not cuddly either. Apparently, their fur is not soft. It's wiry and gross. And do people want to, like, show this adorable koala? Ugh.
Yeah, it's those types of people are like the koalas. So let them have each other.
If only it were that simple.
Studs was right.
I'll never say that again. Mike Florio is going to join us to talk all things NFL next. Bernstein, Holmes, Rahimi here with you until Cubs baseball on The Score.